All right, good afternoon, everyone. It's Joe Varnador. Hope everybody is doing well. We've got Miss Ellen Katz on the line running the boards today. And how are you doing today, Ellen?
I'm good, thank you.
Very good. So let's see, we have a question that's popped up already. That's really good, Richard. Let's see. How do I explain to him that we are not commodities brokers? Hey, Richard, if you're going to be on the entire call today, why don't we circle back around? The question was, I met a gentleman the other night. How do I explain to him that we are not commodities brokers? So you may say to him that, you know, we have some pork bellies that we want to sell them as well. So okay. So Ellen, let's see. I cannot, for some reason, see, I just see the Performing Notes webinar screen. I don't see the other, the agenda screen. Can everyone see the agenda screen? Have you done show your screen, Ellen?
Yes, I thought, but let's, there we go. Sorry about that.
All right, there it is. Okay, cool. All right, so we've got Barb up first on topic today for homeowners insurance. So why don't we go ahead and get Barb on, and we'll kind of talk through this with her.
Barb, you are unmuted.
Very good. Hey, Barb, how you doing? Barb? All right. She's probably trying to unmute herself on her end there. Let's go ahead and scroll down to the question, and Barb, you just go ahead and pop on when you are able. Okay, let's see. So when a parcel is sold to an investor, how do you handle the homeowner's insurance? Do you keep the insurance in your name as seller, or do you have the policy changed to the name of the investor? Okay, so when you are a note owner, you are obviously the lender, and you are listed, or you should be listed, as the loss payee on the homeowner's insurance policy. So when you sell a partial, the proper way to do that, I'll just tell you what I've always done. I have always left the homeowner's insurance the way it is as far as the loss payee goes. Typically, that's not a question that most investors will even have come up. I've never had anybody ask me about the homeowner's insurance, but you don't want to muddy the water so much. But what you could do is if your partial investor asks about that, you could put them as the first, and then you would be the secondary loss payee. So you could certainly do it either way, and that would be just a phone call to your insurance agent, and or the insurance agent that has the homeowner's insurance policy, and that would be adding the person that is buying that partial onto as a loss payee. Because understand that when you sell a partial, the entire note is assigned to your partial investor for that period of time. So if you sell a 60-month partial, then you are they've taken basically first position for that period of time, that 60-month period. And when they're partial, when they've received their 60th payment, then obviously that's going to roll off, and you're going to go back in as being the first in line as the loss payee on the insurance policy. So you can do it either way. If you feel more comfortable, it is not a problem to contact the homeowner's insurance agent and just have them go ahead and add the your partial investor as a loss payee to that as well, and it'll go just like that. So let's see if we have any questions on that, Ellen. Let's see. Dave said he's good to go. Barb is not on her laptop. Okay, so Barb, does that answer your question, or do we need to go a little deeper into that?
Sounds okay. Like that clears it up.
That clears it up. Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate it. All right, we've got a lady by the name of Ellen who has a question as well. Is this on Ellen? No. All right. So let's talk about your fourth place insurance situation, Ellen.
Well, this was unrelated actually to what I was asking before, but we could bring this up. When we're putting fourth place insurance on a performing note, one of the questions that I've gotten from the servicer is, should you insure for the value of the note or the unpaid balance?
Well, that is a great question, especially on a performing note. If it were me, I would do it as a value on the house. Now, that's probably going to be a whole lot more than your investment in the note, but I feel like that if something were to happen, you should be paid what you should be paid. So in that situation, I would go ahead and do it for the other. What is your thought process on that?
Well, we thought about it a couple of different ways. You know, if the quote unquote the house would burn down, which is I guess the main thing you're sort of thinking about, and you insure it. And you insure it for the, you know, the unpaid balance, then you're getting paid, you would get paid back at least sort of the amount that you put out there,
right,
and the amount that you were owed. Right. If you did it for the value of the note, it provides, you know, an added cushion, because the note is, it's not underwater. So, you know, that's an increased value, but right, it wouldn't totally obviously cover you for the total value of that property.
And then the third thing there is obviously insuring it for the full value of the property, which some fourth place insurance companies are only going to insure you for the value of the note, or I'm sorry, for the unpaid balance. So I would insure it, I think, Ellen, for the UPB, not the value of the note, not what you've got invested in it, but the full unpaid balance. Your homeowner or your fourth place insurance company is not going to know really what you paid for the note, what you bought the note at a discount for. So I would do it for the UPB.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and then you had another question that we talked about a minute before we got online without mentioning any servicers there. Fire that, and let's without mentioning any names, we'll just go ahead and let's talk about that for just a second as well.
Well, one of the, you know, it was related is that on a property we need to put forced placed insurance, and I was under the understanding, and obviously could be incorrect being fairly new at this, that if the mortgage or the land contract said that the borrower was accountable or responsible for having insurance on the property, then we could basically charge back the insurance to the borrower, and we wouldn't be responsible for covering the cost of that insurance policy. But what the feedback I got was that the borrower actually has to accept that they will cover the cost of that insurance policy. It's not just an automatic that they have to cover it.
Yeah, after pondering that a few minutes here since we first talked about this, well, in the mortgage note, land contract, whichever security instrument it is, there would be a provision in there that would have that the borrower is required to pay the homeowner's insurance. So if you buy that, and I can't believe they're telling you that obviously you can't park it on the back end of the loan. That's generally what a lender will do. For instance, if you're working with Bank of America and you stop paying your homeowner's insurance is not escrowed with your principal and interest payment, then obviously you drop your insurance. They're going to send you the letter that says, hey, you know, insure this or we're going to. And then when they do that, they're not requiring that they're not beating you up for not paying it every month, but what they are doing is they're going to tack the cost of that insurance onto the back end of the loan. So that's the provision that would take care of that. And they are correct in that I can't force you to do something. You don't have to do it. The only other thing would be that if you were, you know, if they're not paying it, then and you want to force that process, obviously you could have your attorney or your servicer's attorney send a letter to the homeowner saying that, hey, this house is not insured. It needs to be insured. You either insure it or we're going to do it for you. If you would like, we'll buy an insurance policy on it, and you can pay us for that. They are in breach of the agreement if they're not paying the insurance, but you know, obviously you can't force them other than you know, the letter from the attorney, or secondly, suing them, even possibly foreclosing or starting a foreclosure process because they're not paying the insurance. So most lenders are going to just tack it onto the back end, and it should have that verbiage in the in your security instrument, whether it's a land contract, mortgage, note, a mortgage or deed of trust, trust deed. So check that and see what that language is.
Okay, but you can tack it onto the back end without sort of getting their permission.
That is correct.
Okay, then that's fine. But that wasn't made clear, so I'll have to follow up.
Right, yeah, you can tack it the back end. Let's see, Dave has a question here. If the insurance is based on the value of the house, just do it for your note investment, then you get paid. The rate is higher if you, you're exactly right, Dave. The rate is higher if you insure for the value of the house. In either case, it comes off your monthly payment and messes with your cash flow, which is absolutely right. Therefore, unpaid balance. Also, the servicer has to send two letters to the borrower stating that this is going to happen. If no letter, the borrower can push back and therefore not allow it to be placed on the back end. So yeah, Dave is exactly right. The letters have to go out, and they would go out. If you want to see how the really how it works with a regular lender, the Bank of America's, the Wells Fargo's, and you're not escrowing your taxes and your insurance, just stop paying them, and you'll certainly see that you'll get a letter almost immediately, because the insurance company is required, the homeowner's insurance company is required to notify the lender immediately, which really is probably about 30 days, that the borrower has stopped, has dropped the coverage on the property. Now, you know, obviously it happens where people change coverage or to change insurance companies, maybe from State Farm to Nationwide or to someone else, and that kind of gets messed up in the mail. But yes, there is a letter requirement that is required, a notice requirement. Anything you ever do when you're dealing with a loan of any type, there is notice requirements, CFPB, all of that comes into play when you're doing that. So that is correct. And Michael, he says, I wouldn't put this in this I wouldn't purchase insurance coverage just to cover the note piece or price. You will have a deductible that would return you less than you paid for the note. Yep. It's better to insure property for at least the note purchase price. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, we want to insure it not for the unpaid balance and not what we bought the note for. So really, there's only really three different, and an insurance company, they're not going to let you over-insure a property anyway. When you sit down with your local agent and you insure your house, they're going to go through the process of questioning you as to what kind of construction, what are the finishes, and all of those things. So they're not going to let you over-insure it per se. It would either be, but they want you to insure it, obviously, for selfish reasons, for what the property is worth, because they don't want to, you know, have a lawsuit on the back end. But in this case, the insurance company would not know what you bought the note for. So the unpaid balance would be the proper thing to insure the note for on any of, or for the property for on any of this. So, yeah, good stuff. All right, so let's see, Ellen. We have who is next here?
Brian. Richard. Richard.
Or is it Richard?
It's Richard. I had the name incorrect.
Oh, you did. Okay.
So I am going to unmute. Richard has logged in twice, so I'm going to unmute both and see if this works.
Hello there. Can you hear me now?
Hey. Yes, we can hear you now. Hey,
good,
Richard,
how are you doing? We're doing great here in California.
Very good, very good. It's probably not as hot in California as it is here in South Florida, I can tell you.
You might be right. It's 106 out, something like that here in California today.
Is it really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're having a bit of a heat wave.
So where do you live in California?
I'm in outside of Sacramento, a little town called Folsom.
Okay.
Folsom Prison.
Folsom? Is
yep.
that the prison?
That's where the prison is. Yeah, we're about a mile away.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to sing you part of the Folsom Prison Blues from Johnny Cash. So you may
Isn't
want
that great? Love that song. Sounds good.
Hey, Richard, you've got some good questions here. And Ellen, I'm going to have you, if you'll turn that screen over to me, we're going to walk through some of this stuff and make it a little more, hopefully a little more understandable here when we do that. Ellen, do you know how to do that?
You should have control.
Show my screen. Very good. Okay, so Richard, let's kind of take our time and walk through this. So I'm going to let you kind of read your scenarios there so we can kind of go through them and play with some of these numbers as to what it looks like. So go ahead and I'll let you kind of walk through this.
Sure, just a quick setup. So I'm a new student, and I read through the hello letter and all the stuff I'm supposed to do, and one of those items was to go through the training on the Note School site, and there's seven performing Note videos or webinars that we were asked to watch. One of those is Serena giving advice on how to go through a performing Note test tape, or just performing Note tape, looking for what would be a good performing Note resale of a partial.
Right.
And in that, she advised that we throw out anything with interest rates greater than 8%. And intuitively, it doesn't make sense to me, and so I'm trying to understand why I would want to ignore a 10% rate note when that has a better return for me ultimately and the same return for the partial investor.
Gotcha. So there is... Obviously, there are several schools of thought on that, and Zarina may jump on here in just a little bit, so we'll get her take on that. What worries some people when they're buying or they're looking at a note is the fact that if I buy a note, Richard, that has a, you know, the face value, the coupon rate is 10%, and I sell a partial at an 8% rate, well, they're going to look, the partial buyer is going to look at the note and they're going to say, well, the interest rate is 10% and I'm buying at 8. That's kind of the thought process behind buying, you know, if you buy an 8% note, you buy a 10% note, you buy a 12% note. So that really for me is not a huge issue, because got to understand, you've got two different Lisa's giving me crap here on the on the thing there about singing, so I got to laugh here, then we'll keep going. So thank you, Lisa. I'm going to get you on the call in just a second. Lisa Hankson lives in right out of, I don't know, somewhere up there close to you, Richard. So
Anyway,
when you're there are two types of investors you could be selling a partial of a note to. One of the groups of people that I sell partials to are real estate investors that they've been investing for a long time. Okay, like one of my guys I've known, he's 80 years old. I've known him since I was, you know, I was 20 and he was 40 or something, or 50 or whatever that was. So I've known him for a long time, and he was a very active real estate investor. He, after he got, you know, tired being, you know, really active, he wanted to start going a little more passive. So when he went passive, he said, well, I'll be a hard money lender and I'll loan at, you know, 12, 14, 15, 16%. But what he found with that was that he, there was still some work involved. It wasn't true passive, because when you're loaning to a newbie investor out there that's going to be buying a house and then fixing it and flipping it, well, you know, you've got to manage that process and make sure they're doing that correctly. So when I went to him and said, look, I've got partials I want to sell you, and I gave him a 12% rate of return. He doesn't. He's familiar with real estate. Very familiar with real estate. Didn't really care anything about the note. He was just concerned about his rate of return. Okay. Sure. So I gave him a higher rate of return because I sell him partials off of reperforming notes with zero seasoning. Okay, so I give him a higher rate of return. Then you've got the investors that most of us are, or most people are out there looking at, and these are, you know, retired school teachers, retired engineers, retired folks that have an IRA that, you know, they just, it's invested in nothing or whatever it's invested in, they're getting very little. So you offer them an 8% rate of return and they, you know, they their head spins around and they go, wow, I can get an 8% rate of return. So in my mind, it is really not a big deal that the interest rate on the note is 10% and you're selling it at 8%. So let's kind of play with that for just a minute and look at that, and let's change some numbers here. So what I did is we've got an estimated value of the house of $120,000, and I'm using your example of a $100,000 sure. note at 10% interest, 360 months, $877.57 in a payment, 30 payments made, and 330 payments remaining for unpaid balance of $98,499. And that's kind of where you were going with that particular deal, right? Or with that particular example. Okay, so if we look at that and say, okay, if we wanted to sell a 60-payment partial, well, first of all, let's see what it would be worth if we sold the entire balance on that. And obviously, if we sold it at 8%, it's going to be more than the balance on the note because the coupon rate is 10%. If we sell it for 8%, obviously we can't sell a full purchase based on, you know, based on that scenario. And if we sold it at 10%, then it's going to be for whatever the balance of the loan would be. So typically we would be looking at a minimum of a 12% return if we were buying the entire note. So that's going to be about $84,466. Personally, I would probably want a little bonus in that. So let's just say we buy that at 14. So what that did for us, and you can see the discount on the full became a $25,000 discount, right? And our investor, our ITV, which we want to keep, you know, we want to keep below 70 at least. Brings us down to 60%, 61%, which is good. All right, so based on that, now let's go back and say, okay, if we sold 60 payments, we're going to change this down to an 8% return. So we go back to this. So we sell 60 payments, and we would sell those. That would give our investor an 8% rate of return, and they would fund $43,280. So the questions you had on that, so if we, well, let's just look at it and see what it would be if we sold it at par, at the coupon rate. So it'd be $41,000. So the difference isn't that great. It's only $2,000, right, on that because it's a shorter term.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't think you're, you know, I think your thinking is that if I'm selling this for 8, the coupon rate is 10, it's not going to be an issue, Richard. Does that make sense? I mean, they're really looking for a rate of return.
That's right. That was what my understanding was. That's the obvious logic, and I was trying to understand Serena's point, saying to ignore anything with anything in the tape that had a interest rate greater than 8%. That just didn't logically make sense to me.
Right, and she may have had, and like I said, she may have had something else on her mind, and she may have been saying, okay, if it's 10 and we sell for 8, then ooh, you know, they're gonna get a little bit freaked out about it. But really, it's how you present this to your investor. Okay,
yeah, that's what I figured.
So, yeah, it's not a big deal. And if it were to pay off early, it doesn't really matter because we're funding They're funding 43,280, and let's see if we went over here and looked at here's our partial AM. And so if we sold those 60 payments, you can see all along the way as to what their rate of or what their payoff would be based on the entitlement balance here as well.
That's right.
So here's your 877 payment. There's your principal. There's your interest. So but that's on the first payment there. So anyway, so you got 60. So they're actually buying, if you were multiply that, they're actually buying $61,000. So it doesn't matter as it, if it paid off early, because the entitlement balance is going to be different than the regular AM schedule on the loan.
That's right. Yeah, makes total sense. Thank you for the feedback. I was just trying to understand, like I said, the training, I don't think matched your direction. Maybe we ought to update the training, because it does guide newbies like me to not buy something greater than 8%, and the logic doesn't make a lot of sense. So,
right, and you know, it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really matter. The investor is looking, and you are talking, you know, when you're talking to this person too, this the guy that's got his IRA or the lady that has her IRA, they're wanting a passive return. They don't really care. They don't want to have to collect payments. They don't want to have to worry about the taxes. They don't want to have to worry about the insurance. That's when so when you're doing this, and the best way to the best type of note really to be looking for when you're scanning a tape or you're looking at something that you can sell, obviously some of the other factors that would go along with that is you would want, if it was a 20-year AM and there was 12 years remaining or 8 years remaining when you bought it, meaning 12 years of, you know, 12 years of seasoning, that's when it gets a little more dicey, because the interest, that interest rich period, can be a challenge. So
yeah,
we did,
makes
sense. Right, so like last year we were looking at a note, going over a note that somebody was looking at buying. It wasn't a Colonial note, but it was a note they were looking at buying, and there was only it was a 20-year AM and had 15 years of seasoning, so there was 5 years of payments left on that. And when you look at, you know, they were wanting to sell like a 3-year partial on that. And it's tougher when you're doing that, because obviously 95% for that first period is going to be interest. So it's easier to sell that interest-rich part of anything than the other. So that's kind of what you want to look at as well. So what else can we kind of run through here to get a little, you know, a more clear understanding, you know, in your mind? Because this is not only, you know, for you, this is for everybody out there. So what else do you have that you had some questions on as far as going through that?
You know, I think the big question for me was why I would want to ignore something that had a higher interest rate. To me, the manager math says that I'll make more money if I buy a higher rate note and sell off a partial. I always have more skin in the game. I'll have more skin on the bone, I mean, meat on the bone. A note that's got a higher interest rate and an earlier payoff, either a balloon or a longer term to pay off. So that all made total sense to me, and I think all that was correct in the training. It was just this piece on ignore the higher rate that was pushing me sideways.
Right, and you know, what we're looking at, and most of the stuff on the, I think on the Colonial tapes, you know, it's the stuff that does have a higher interest rate on it. They've got a 9 or a 10 or something like that. You know, what you would normally see, though, is with a seller finance note, and you guys know, I mean, I've been in the performing note business for 25 years, and if we were to go back and look at how notes really are written by regular sellers, that interest rate, instead of being 10, Richard, would be maybe 5. And let's go back and let's just plug it in, just kind of as a little lesson here, and we'll change the numbers, and let's say we have a 5% interest rate for 360 months. So that drops our payment down. So we're going to take this to 5. And we're going to make the payment now $536 a month. here and we could buy a full at a 14% based on a 10% return, based on a 10% face. So let's just look at this and it'll be interesting for most of us here. So the balance here is going to be $96,160 and $96,160. Okay, so we've got that. Now, if we go over and we look and say, okay, now if we were to buy a full, remembering the full on the other was what, about $73,000 at 14%? Look at that.
A whole lot less meat on the bone.
Yeah, you see, you've assimilated well into the note school deal with the Eddyisms, with the meat on the ball on the bone and the and the and the ghoul staring at the new gate and all of those, all of the Eddyisms. So yeah, that's a whole lot different. And for some of the folks on the call, they're going to say, "Oh my God, that's really what it is." But let me tell you something. The notes that we're buying, that Colonial is generally selling, are notes that were originated by other investors. But when you've got Grandma and Grandpa selling their house, or not even Grandma or Grandma selling their house, there, for some reason, they think they have as much money as Bank of America, and this is the typical scenario versus the other scenario, really, with the 10%, when you're looking at buying, like Dave Fernicky does, when he's sending out letters to investors, or people that have created a note. And I'm going to unmute Dave here real quick. Hey, Dave, can you hear me? Dave? Anyway, he'll wake up in a second and he'll come on. But this is what most of them look like. You know, I had a guy call me last year I guess it was late last year, and he says, "Hey Joe, it's so and so." He says, "I live in Temecula, California. You bought a note from me and, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago or whatever it was." And you know, as we go through the dance as far as getting the information about the note, so how did you come up with your sale price? "Well, I had a realtor give me a BPO." I said, "Great. So you know what that number was? That was 185, and he sells it for 160. "Well, the question is, why did you sell it for 160? "Well, because it needed a little bit of work." You know, so okay, understand. Did it need $20,000 worth of work or $25,000 worth of work? And the answer obviously was no, it didn't. So anyway, he still sold it at a big discount based on, you know, it needed $10,000 worth of work, didn't need $25,000 worth of work. And you say, "So, okay, that's cool. Let's see, how much money did you get as a down payment?" "Well, you know, Joe, I got zero money as a down payment because it needed that work." And so he's got zero down on a $160,000 sale price. And then you ask them what the term is, and it's a 30-year term, and then you ask them what the interest rate is, and it's a 3% interest rate. So it gets really crazy sometimes, and a lot of them look more like this than they do. Wait, oh, by the way, the guy had bad credit as well. So he got a $185,000 house for $160,000 with no money down, with bad credit, at a 3% rate for 30 years. So when you, right. and he wasn't making his payments, so it really wasn't a performing loan, it was a non-performing loan. So anyway, be thankful when you have the higher interest rate notes, because when you call this guy back and you say, "Hey, by the way, you know, we can give you $40,000 for your $96,000 balance," how would it be to make that call, Richard?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that one.
Well, and you know, the other part of that is when you're talking to that person, again, then you go back, you know, to the seller finance stuff that Zarina was doing, and basically what you're doing is going back through, and you know, like Dwayne uses and Zarina and even Eddie, you know, I didn't bake the pie, you baked it. You know, so you created this monster, so let's try to figure it out and let's try to get you out of it. But so it's not a bad thing to have a higher interest rate and selling for less than the other. So there's always plenty of money there to make that happen. So what else? I know you would ask about internal rate of return and all of that. And that's really, that internal rate of return is I mean, that's kind of a funky formula to figure that. And typically, is it used on a real estate type investment like this? It's more used on when you're looking at a stock investment and that type of thing. But you know, the biggest thing for us would be, you know, is the return on investment, which you could calculate, and it's much easier to calculate. And then the cash on cash return, which is that formula that says if I invest $20,000 in this and it throws off $20,000 a year in profit, then I've got a great cash on cash return. It's 100% or something like that. So anyway, do you want to go through any of that, or are we good and we're not going to muddy the water up?
You know what I was looking for, and maybe you guys have it in your training materials or your other collateral, as I start purchasing notes and want to sell partials to investors, I need that package that is, this is how I sell a partial to an investor. And I think I have the general concepts down, but when I try to compare, I spoke to a few people, and one of them said, well, why wouldn't I invest in a real estate REIT? Or why wouldn't I put my money in the stock market, right? And they have these questions, and I thought, hey, I should put together some material that shows what they would make on the different types of investments, whether it be stock market or real estate trust or buying a property and doing a turnkey or buying a partial on a note.
Right.
And different levels of risk associated with each one of those. But what I got stuck on, and I'm an engineer and I should be able to make simple calculations, but I got stuck on comparing those different scenarios financially to be able to show to an investor in simple terms what they would make more money on with the associated risk.
And this kind of goes back into the question that the other Richard Thiemann, had said, and that was, I met a gentleman the other night, how do I explain to him that we are not commodities brokers? Obviously, a commodity is, you know, is pork bellies or soybean futures or whatever that looks like. So obviously, we're not doing that. Dave, I've unmuted you. So,
can you hear me now, Joe?
Hey. So yes. Dave's been around a little while. Dave's been around the block. So I'll let him weigh in on this conversation here, and I think this is a great topic for both of the Richards, Richard McGrew and Richard Jimenez, because several months ago we had several students that were saying, okay, they were going out and they were talking to an investor, and you look at simple interest versus an amortized loan, and Richard, that's one of the biggest challenges that you would have. Really, I'm not thinking more as not a commodity, we're not selling, you know, silver and gold, you know, all of that. So, you know, we're selling a tangible asset here. We're selling a note secured by a piece of real estate. So this investment versus investing in a stock market or throwing your money into a hedge fund or getting into commodities or gold, you know, any of that stuff, or investing in, I'm trying to think, the exchange, the money exchange, or the difference between money, all that kind of stuff. It's totally different, because this is something that has a tangible value. There is a physical piece of property that is attached to this. So, Richard, if you were an investor and you said, Joe, will you loan me, I'll loan you $100,000, and we're going to do a simple interest loan. I'm going to loan it to you, Richard, at 10% interest for a year, and then you're going to pay a payment on it every month, and at the end of the year, you're going to pay me off. So let's not do 100, let's do 10,000. So we've got a $10,000 loan at 10% interest. And if we were to amortize this, the monthly payment would be $6,106. So if we did a regularly amortized loan, which means that loan is going to pay off, that $10,000 loan at 10% interest is going to pay off in 12 months versus doing that same loan at simple interest. So we've got a $10,000 loan. Your monthly payment at 10%, so 10% of $10,000 is $1,000. So over that year period of time, the interest that is going to be recognized is going to be $1,000 because you're actually not getting the money back until, you know, till the end of the year. Okay, now if we took that $6,106 amortized payment, so 6106 times 12, well, that's only going to give us, well, hold on a second. So we've got, that's not right. What did I do wrong there, Dave?
It's on my screen, you don't show anything.
I'm not showing it. Yeah, because I'm not doing it on there. I'm just kind of winging it here. So we got $10,000 as a present value on an amortized loan. We've got 10% interest. We've got 1 year. Okay. So that's one payment a year if we did 12 payments. Okay, the payment's $879 a month. Excuse me, guys. So it's $879.16 a month. So if we multiplied on the amortized loan, 879.16 times 12 months, that's $10,549. So if it were simple interest on a $10,000 loan, 10%, the lender would make $1,000, right, Richard?
That's correct.
On an amortized loan, if you multiply the monthly payment, we amortize that over 12 months, $879.16 a month times 12. Well, that's only $10,549.92. So it's roughly $450 less in a return for the person that loaned the money, right? I mean, that's what some people would look at it and say, but if I do it as simple interest, then it's this. But the thing that everybody doesn't figure is that we're just getting $10,100 back at the end of the year. But you're getting a little piece of principal and a little piece of the principal and a big piece of the interest every month. So the amortized loan, even though that's still a 10% rate of return, you're not having to wait 12 months before you get your $1,000 back. You're getting a big piece of that on that short-term loan. You're getting a big piece of that on a monthly basis. You're not waiting till the end of the year. Dave, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, to your point, Joe, on if you do straight simple interest and it's, let's say it's a hard money loan, yeah, you get your $10,000 back in a year, whatever it might be, with a balloon payment.
Right.
On the amortization, your risk is being reduced every month because you're getting a piece of principal back. And as you get that principal back, the key is not to go out and spend it, but to reinvest it.
Right.
And also, depending upon what you're buying, if you look at the hard money, I'm going to compare this to hard money, a lot of those cats back in the mid-2000s were lending at 80% loan-to-value,
right,
and they went away. Whereas we're buying, what we have is a safe, conservative, quantifiable return where there's no vacillation as compared to the stock market, which is way up and way down, and you can get crucified in a heartbeat. This is there. So, that's what I've been using as a sales pitch, for lack of another term.
Except you can't use the word safe, of course, because that's...
Well, it's safer. You can rate them. How would you rate the stock market on a scale of 1 to 10 for safety? Let them tell you about what they've experienced in wins or losses in the stock market. And then be off of that. Am I wrong, Joe?
No, and you know, the corny old joke in real estate investing is, why do you invest in real estate? Because it's real, okay? And that's the biggest thing that I, you know, when I'm talking to people. So yeah, invest in the stock market. A tick one way or a tick the other can wipe you out, and you have no control over that, and your money has gone up into thin air. You know, with a piece of real estate, if everything went to heck in a handbasket, I still have a house that I could go live in, or I could plant, you know, plant a vegetable on, and I could eat, and I could do all of that if we had the worst case scenario happen. So that's what you've got to be a little more cognizant of. Yeah, when you've got your $10,000 in a savings account, and you're getting 1% a year. So what is that? Is that $100? You know,
maybe. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so that, let's be realistic about what investments are really paying. To get a simple interest as a return on any investment, you know, what's it going to be? So let's talk about a hard money lender, Dave. So I know some that are doing. So they'll loan you, let's just say they'll loan you $50,000, and it's 1% a month. Well, you're paying $500 a month, right? So based on that, yeah, is that a little better than you're getting $500 a month, or you're going to get 6%, or what is it, 12? You're going to get $6,000 back at the end of the year if it lasts a year. Well, generally, it's not going to be a year. You know, typically, in the best case scenario, the hard money borrower is going to be paying it back within, you know, 3 to 6 months. So, and that, and at the end of the day, is that a more risky investment than being in? Or not, let's not say risky, because you still can take the house, but is that a more, which is the more passive investment? Is it investing it in a note, or is it investing it as a hard money loan?
But Joe, on a hard money loan, you've also got yield drag. When that deal pays off, if you don't have a place to put it, you're getting nothing back in your money.
That's true, and you're also going to have yield drag, obviously, with if you're in that scenario where you've got $879 a month, you financed $10,000 at 10% for a year. You've got some yield drag there if you're not investing that money as you get it back every month as well. And 95% of the investors out there don't realize that, and that can be a challenge. That can be a challenge for a fund manager as well. When you're getting the monies coming back in, you have to continually invest those monies in order not to have that yield drag. Wallace, let's see what you. I used to do a lot of hard money lending, private lending. I like notes better. I can add my 2 cents. Let's get Wallace on here, and let's hear Wallace's take. Because I know that a lot of you, and the only reason I'm spending this time on this today, guys, is because I know that as you're out there talking, these are some of the things. Hey, Lisa, can I? You had something you want to add? I've unmuted you.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
I'm good. Talk louder. I can't hear you.
Talk louder.
I can't hear Lisa very well. Can you hear her, Dave? Can you hear her?
No, Richard? it's really faint. She's way on the other side of the house.
Yeah.
Can you hear her now?
Way bad.
Barely.
Oh, okay.
There you are.
There you are. You're better now. So what did you have to add? And then Wallace, I'm going to come to you.
All I wanted to say about notes is that, you know, notes have a lot more liquidity than a lot of the other investments you were talking about, because you bought a note, you can sell the note. So,
well,
sell it tomorrow. But I mean, like, you guys were talking about investing in a REIT and things like that. Right. You know, try and go sell your REIT share.
You can't.
So you also have that. This is one thing that I share with people is, you know, notes have liquidity. It's not like running down to the bank and cashing a check. But, you know, chances are we can have that, you know, turned around for you in less than 30 days. And that's pretty quick. So
you can also use a note as collateral at the bank.
That's true, too.
That's very true. You sure can. I forgot the term of that. It just kind of not pontification, but hypothecation.
Yeah, pontificate, Joe. Go ahead.
Pontification, yeah. So, Wallace, what did you want to add on that for you? I've got you unmuted as well.
Okay, great. Thanks. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you just fine. Thanks for
coming. Yeah, so, well, I guess I'll go through the plus and minuses. Perception-wise, back to what Lisa was saying, the perception of hard money is the fact that it is easily, I don't know, I guess the term is, you can liquidate it kind of quick because the term is theoretically short-term, 6 months, maybe a year. Mm-hmm. I can kind of tell you that these days inventory is so tight that if you're lending money on that or investing in something like that, you're going to work with borrowers who have really tight margins where they're squeezed to a higher price point, meaning here in California, you know, a few years ago they can pick up a property for maybe $500,000. Now they have to go and pick up property for $1 million, and they might not have the skills to do that. So that's a risk. So kind of inside information there. I like notes better because these are people who have emotional attachments to their homes. They don't want to lose it. Most of the time when I did hard money, the biggest caveat or the biggest thing is skin in the game. If they don't have skin in the game, you're going to be hurting.
Well, the first time they have a problem, they'll just throw their hands up and walk away, and then you're going to end up with a piece of real estate, yeah.
Right, and back to the whole, what you were talking about, velocity of money, that's when the loan is complete and then you get your money back, theoretically. I keep saying theoretically, and I can talk a long time about that.
Yeah.
When the loan's complete and you get your money back, because of the current conditions, inventory is so tight that you do have to go chase down more deals, right? And vetting the borrower again, making sure, you know, doing the whole underwriting process again is a chore. So I like notes too, because now I can sell it to some of the investors I know. And tell them, hey, this is a longer-term solution. And I'm still working on how to position partials because some of my investors are so stuck in the idea of a six-month loan that they can't look at anything else. But I keep saying theoretically to them.
So. Lisa, she's on the line there. So anyway, Lisa, where do you live, Wallace? And Lisa's in Northern California as well.
Oh, I'm in Northern California too.
Okay. Lisa, where are you?
I live in Gilroy.
Gilroy, that's right.
Gilroy.
I'm in Pleasanton.
Oh, lovely place.
Yeah, we're all seeing a heat wave right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, guys, and just to kind of go back to that, and the reason this is valuable for you guys is simply this, for everybody on the call here. Most of you came to being in the note business from going to a Real Estate Investors Association meeting, and some of you have started subgroups there. So when you're up and you're talking in front of the group and you say, hey, I'm going to have a subgroup meeting and learn, you want to come and learn about how to invest in notes. Well, some of those investors that are going to be there, and they're going to come listen to your presentation about why they should invest in notes. Is that hard money lender that was in that group? And that hard money lender I don't want to get my money back every 6 months, and then I've got to go out and find the next deal. And Wallace, you know as well as I do, I mean, you look around and it's not, whether you're in California, I mean, the dollars are a lot higher there, but the inventory issue is the inventory issue all over the United States. So
yeah, it is. You know, I can tell you another funny story. I was talking to another, I guess, fellow private lender, and she lives in Maryland, and she was saying, hey, can you help me talk to this hard money broker in Southern California? And I did, and this hard money broker, which used to charge, well, who used to do business only in California, who used to charge 12%+ with 2 or 3 points, is now talking to a friend of mine in Maryland to do deals in Maryland at 8%.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're being squeezed. So hopefully
Well, they are, and that goes back to supply and demand. You've got a huge amount of, so in some cases, especially in the California market, you've got a huge amount of money chasing very few deals. Right. So the rate of, or the cost of the money is going down considerably, because again, if you don't have the money out there, if you don't have it out on the street or invested, then you've got nothing. And so yeah, for somebody that's been used to doing 12 and 3 points or whatever it is, it's talking about going down to 8. You know, that's a significant part of the market here, all over. And I don't know if you guys saw it, but the five hottest areas as far as price appreciation was released here a couple of days ago on DS News, and I think most of you get that. And the four out of five, they're all in Florida within 100 miles of me. You've got Palm Beach County was number one. You've got Orlando was number two, Tampa number three, and maybe I'm off on those second two. Fort Lauderdale number four, and then you've got Seattle, Washington number five. So guys, there are the bottom line to Richard and Richard there, to go back to what we were talking to there, as you're talking to investors, the best thing you can do is sit back and kind of listen and find their pain points.
Yep.
And as you find those pain points, whether it was that guy or gal that was a hard money lender, you know, whether they've got money that's sitting in an IRA and they are totally scared to death as to what, you know, what to invest that in. You know, whether they're they're looking for passive rates of return, and you know, today an 8% rate of return, an 8% return on a long-term investment, and you know, when you're talking about selling partials, I like to keep my partials at 5 years or less, because I'm younger, and I'm not younger, I mean, you know, I'm 57 years old, but I don't want it way out there. I've got a 5-year plan. But some folks really want it out there 7, 8, 9, 10 years. So really, I like to keep mine shorter, but you can kind of look at it and base that person's investment based on what their goals are. And if you've got a guy that's 80, you know, that's 80 years old, you may not want to go 10 years. You may want to go 5. So that's why I kind of keep mine and tailor them to what they need and what we can work with there. So let's see, Wallace, Lisa, Dave, Richard, any final parting thoughts here as we start to wind the call down today?
Joe, I got a question.
Sure.
You're talking to an investor. Now, I'm putting you on the spot here because you're quick at this. What would be the 5 benefits of notes compared to other investments? Just if you could rattle off 5 quick things, and I have a reason behind this, and I'll share it with you later.
Okay, so the first thing that I would think would obviously being that it's tangible, it's real estate, it's something that if I wanted to go over and lay down in the grass and roll around in the grass or the dirt and do all of that, I could certainly do that. It generally is an appreciating asset.
How can you say that?
Well, how can I say that? Because in most markets right now, it is an appreciating asset.
So your equity is appreciating in case the payer goes south.
Exactly, right. So it's being paid down every month. So every month it's down a little bit. It goes down a little bit. I'm getting, you know, what I'm getting though too is when I'm buying long term, and it's paying down, I'm getting, it's interest rich. So what I'm getting too is I'm getting interest on that. The balance is staying up there because of the discrepancy between, you know, 95% of the first, you know, 5 years, 6 years, 8 years is going to be interest, and the other 5% is going to be a principal reduction. So the balance is staying up, but I'm getting that interest, that juice, as we call it, as it goes down. It's also going to be, whether it's whether it's a good market or a bad market, so it's not appreciating, we have bought at a discount so that we have a better equity position in this if it does go south. As Lisa said, it's liquid, and there are several different ways that it's liquid. So I buy a note today. I could certainly, if the borrower, and by the way, I'm gonna kind of know what the credit and the pay history looks like on the borrower. I could certainly go out and I could have that borrower, I could incentivize them to go out and refinance that loan, and get my money back 100 cents on, you know, 100 cents of what more I bought at 40, and the payoff is 52. So it's very liquid, and that can happen within 30 days. I can sell the note, or I can sell another partial. So it is very liquid versus other, not, you know, when you look at a stock, I can pick up a stock and I can sell it here in the next 30 seconds if I wanted to. So I think that would be number four. And then number five, let's see, number five would be that, one of the three basic things in life. Got to have shelter. So it's always going to be around, and it's going to be one, you know, it's one of the basic needs of life. So anyway, that's okay. Kind of my take if I were to look at those top five.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was good, okay. Joe.
I am super late. Well done.
All right. So anything else, guys?
Yeah, the only thing I have left to say, Joe, is 57 is young.
She is,
you know,
right.
It shocks me to say that. Not that I think it's a bad thing. It's just I can't believe it.
Wow.
You know, I can't believe that, you know, of course, we all, as we get older, we all have that thing that we think we look like this, and then we look at the mirror and we go, who is that? You know?
What the scary part, Joe, is when you look in the mirror and you go, isn't that my dad? Isn't that my mom? Yeah.
The good thing for me is my dad is 81 years old, and he looks like he's about 60, and he has
right
the energy. Probably he's got as much energy as I do, so I have to stay on him all the time. We just finished we bought an REO here 3 or 4 months ago, and we just finished it, and you know, he likes to get out there and do all this stuff himself, and I'll go by there and say, Dad, what are you doing? You know, but
well, you got good genes then.
Yeah, I would say. And his mother, you know, my grandmother lived to be 97 years old. So
wonderful.
Anyway, okay, so good deal, guys. I think it was a good call today. I think we all kind of learned some things about working with investors, and I think that's one of the hardest things for a lot of our new students to wrap their minds around is I'm out there. What qualifies me to talk to somebody about making an investment in notes? And the qualifier for each one of us is that, you know, some of us have been in it much longer than others, but we do have tangible inventory at a good rate of return. So if we don't want to say safe, we want to say good, we can do that. But that's our differential between the other things that are out there. Ellen, I know I've talked a lot today. I'm gonna let you take the screen back so that you can do whatever you need to do to get the call taken care of. Two quick things. Three quick things. Number one, make sure that you are getting your entity correct when you're going to Notes Direct. Is that, am I saying that correctly, Ellen?
Yes, people just need to make sure that the information they've inputted into Notes Direct about their purchasing entity is accurate, that they haven't used abbreviations, that they've used the full name and the name that they would want to appear on the purchasing agreement and subsequent documents related to that asset, because it's difficult to change the entity names once the purchasing agreement is signed and, you know, the paperwork that follows after.
Gotcha. Very good. Two other things. Martha Speed's Mastermind at Spanish Ford is coming up September 15 through 18. So, ladies, those of you that are interested in doing that, go to the website and check on that. Note Expo is that first weekend in November. Start thinking about that as well. If any of you are in the Philadelphia area, I am going to be at Greater Philadelphia Area next Friday. I'm sorry, next Thursday and next Saturday. I'm going to be in Asheville on Monday. Let's see. Let me look at my calendar here. Monday the 8th, and then I'll do a full day there on the 13th. There is a 3-day in Indiana and Indianapolis this weekend starting tomorrow. So it's a big money. Anybody that's close to that and wants to do that as well. Guys, thanks so much. Great call, and I appreciate each and every one of you. Take care. Get to work out there, and we'll talk later. Thanks so much. Bye-bye now. Thanks, Alan.
Good job.
Thank you.
Great job. Thanks, Joe. Bye, Joe.
Bye, guys.